What is up? Welcome to another edition of Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host, of course, also covering the team at The Athletic. He's Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big show, as always, on a Wednesday. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal for the crossover. And, of course, Jason Bukala from Sportsnet, former NHL scout. He joins us at 1 o'clock. The Canucks are practicing today, so lots to get into here as well. What's going on, Drantz?
Hey, not much, man. Honestly, it's an interesting day, or it was an interesting day for the Canucks yesterday. Some tweaks in terms of practice lines with some resonance, I think, for where this team is positioned. But, you know, as I thought about what we saw yesterday, and obviously we get more information today with Phil DiGiuseppe clearing and Yuri Patera very much not. Yuri Patera brought in to bolster the Canucks' depth behind Thatcher Demko, now bolstering the depth behind Jeremy Swayman.
Or filling in for Jeremy Swayman.
Hey, this guy's good. Must be. No, look, it was a tough camp for Patera. I thought he played fine in the preseason. End of the day, he still gave this team, in Demko's indefinite absence. We don't have a sense of the timeline or how extended it'll be, but we know that it's indefinite for now. And, you know, losing Patera is actually substantive. I do think, no matter what you thought of how he looked at training camp, and for me, I thought he looked miles behind Nikita Tolopilo. That's a training camp environment where goaltenders are just facing 20 rush shots in a in sequence. Like, no environment to judge any goaltender or puck stopper, despite David Quadrelli's desire to do so. And so, you know, you lose Patera. Well, that's the third guy, not counting Demko for the moment, with NHL experience, right? Like, Shelovs has played 18 games. Lankinen's 100+. And then you had Patera, who played 8, right? A veteran, polished, professional goaltender. Tolopilo's entering his second North American pro season. Played really well last year. Looked really good at camp. Would have liked to see more of him in the preseason. But you know, until Demko's back, until we have clarity on that, he's now your third goaltender. You're one injury away. And so, I just think that's worth noting. Do the Canucks look to claim another guy off waivers to replace him? Tough to do, right? Because you can't just assign them to the American League.
Yes.
You can only really claim a guy you plan to use in the NHL. So, going to be interesting to see if the Canucks feel like that demands a reaction, or whether or not they're just comfortable with Tolopilo being the three and being the guy in Abbotsford. I'd think definitely the answer is yes, they're comfortable with him being the guy in Abbotsford. Might actually be a good opportunity for him. Third goalie, though?
That seems like a little bit of a stretch. And I think that's the big question for me, is it's not so much about Patera, right? But it's about what do the Canucks do as a reaction, if anything, to this? And how quickly do they do it, right? Because as you said, waivers, not exactly a simple thing to do. You claim a guy off waivers, you have to put him in the NHL. You can't just send him immediately down to the AHL. Is there a trade, a minor league trade, something like that, that they could work out? Or do they say, you know what? Based on the information they have about Thatcher Demko and the whatever, if they have a little bit of confidence that he could be out not as long as we might fear, then maybe they try to make it work with Lankinen and Shelovs in the interim.
Yeah, and also, like, watch for guys on waivers that go unclaimed too, right? Because those are the guys, once they're below the line, you can acquire them for the American League level. I've mentioned Akito Hirose as an example many times because, you know, granted, he's out at the moment with a head injury, but we've seen from this management group, when a guy falls out of their NHL plans on a one-way contract, they've tended to be pretty aggressive in finding solutions to that quote-unquote problem. Not always, right? They've gotten sort of stuck on occasion. I guess Spencer Martin for a year, for example, although he was ultimately claimed off waivers. They got out of that one too. And probably would have looked to move him if they hadn't. But that's the sort of tier of guy. Like, there might be a guy who's, you know, looking at like a $1 million contract or $1.1 million who ends up on waivers. One of those like mildly surprising guys, but their cap hit in the American League is completely buried. You know, in a world where a guy like that clears and has some NHL experience, and you want to spend the money on a fill-in, you know, trading that guy for Akito Hirose, the team that sent him down, saves $300K, and you get free backup goaltending or free depth goaltending, something like that, right?
Yep.
In that mold, I wouldn't be shocked if that was something that at least piqued the Canucks' interest over the next week.
Yeah, that seems like the most likely solution to this, right?
Quote,
and yeah, exactly. Not that it's this massive problem all of a sudden, but, no. You know, as you said, great opportunity for Nikita Tolopilo now in Abbotsford, but also a situation where you would like to probably add some depth going into the season, considering the situation with Demko and all that. I also do wonder, I mean, if they don't
even just another
make that
guy
acquisition, yeah, like what this means when Demko is back, because we've talked about them potentially carrying three goalies. If that is still the plan, then okay, that's it. But if you don't want to carry three goalies, are you going to risk losing Kevin Lankinen on waivers at some point, right? You know what I mean? Like that would seem to be pretty dicey, depending on who you get in a reaction to losing Jiří Patera. So that's a question for down the road.
I think he'd have to struggle significantly for them to risk losing Lankinen.
That's the thing.
But this is kind of where we're at, and we'll get into this more. But you know, as I, you know, with the Canucks going down to 25 guys, we have so much more clarity about some of the choices that they're facing. And I do think we need to prepare ourselves. You know, in a world where the Canucks are going to go with a 21-man roster, right? If that's how this shakes out, right? If they're going to do everything, move heaven and earth to avoid LTI, the choices that come with that are gut-wrenching. Playing a guy short, signing an ATO goalie to back. Like, we've seen this. We've seen how markets, especially markets like Toronto, react to teams playing shorthanded or being forced to make some of these decisions. Like, histrionics are the name of the game, and yet, if you're focused on the prize, I think we need to learn to live with like a level of day-to-day lineup discomfort and uncertainty that we haven't been used to in previous seasons. I'm sure we'll all handle it like level-headed adults.
Especially you. We should emphasize again, Phil DiGiuseppe clears waivers.
I'm the guy that explains that all the time. That's indeed the exact stuff that I'm not worried about.
Phil DiGiuseppe clears waivers, so I'm sure Rick Tocchet is absolutely thrilled today.
And beam it!
They keep that organizational depth in the organization, so that's important for them as well. Christian Wolanin and Nate Smith also clear, but as mentioned, Jiří Patera claimed by the Boston Bruins. All right, Dom, we good to get this going here? All right. Dom looked stunned at me. He was shocked that I had asked him a question during the show he produces. He's like, what? You're calling on me? But anyways, we will now go to the crossover. We'll welcome in our pals, Don Taylor and Rick Dollywell. Of course, you can watch them Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. And they join us every Wednesday here for the crossover. Don, Rick, how's it going, guys?
Very good, guys. Very good. Just
very good, guys.
Got off the air.
Yeah.
And now you're back on it with us. How are you guys?
And a joy to be with you, Thomas.
You look. You sound.
Just so you know, we're getting an echo here.
Ah. All right.
We're getting an echo.
Yeah. Well, you're getting a double echo.
I'm getting
now.
Two echoes.
Yeah, I was gonna say. All right. Well, we'll try to get that figured
out. Tell Elementary to get on it.
Dom gave me the thumbs up. Has it been fixed?
Dom, you don't want
I think so.
You don't want Rick and Donnie to have to listen to my takes twice.
Okay, it's been fixed. There we go. Our crack producing team here at Sportsnet 650 got right on it and fixed it. All right, Rick, we'll start with you. Just, I mean, quick reaction to the Canucks. One, keeping Phil DiGiuseppe in the organization, but losing goalie Jiří Patera to the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, so DiGiuseppe had, I did say this morning, he had teams interested, right? And why not? There's a great depth guy. There's a guy that Rick Tocchet absolutely loves, heavy player who can forecheck. He just really likes him a lot, coachable, teachable, all that stuff. So he clears. Good news for the Vancouver Canucks. The goaltending situation really caught me off guard today, and I'll tell you why. So Jiří Patera is off to Boston, claimed off of waivers. I'm going to tell you an interesting story. Lankinen's agent called Vancouver on July 1st, and he said, hey, my guy's available. And the Canucks told him, well, we're going to sign this Jiří Patera guy. And it's amazing that on July 1st, these two were connected that way. And now Lankinen's here and Patera's gone, which is a very interesting I think this is something Thomas has heard, and I've heard it as well. I can see Vancouver carrying three goaltenders to start the season. So, you know, that's something that's out there. But here's my concern, a little bit concerned about Abbotsford. So Tolopilo is obviously still down there. But if you're going to put a kid like Ty Young down there, Ty Young had his job taken away from him by a young goaltender in Prince George last year. You got a new head coach, Manny Malhotra, the first time he's a head coach at any level, to be honest with you. One thing, you know, it doesn't matter if you're in the NHL, the Western League, or I don't care if you're Adam or Pee-wee, you need goaltenders to win in hockey. And so the depth in Abbotsford takes a hit with Patera gone. I would have liked to see Tolopilo and Patera in Abbotsford if you're going to go with Demko and Lankinen and Silas for a while. But now, obviously, with Patera gone, that takes Abbotsford's backup spot takes a big hit there. It really does.
Well, and also the fact is the organization has only two goaltenders outside of Demko, Rick, with NHL experience. I mean, until Demko's back, you're one injury away from, you know, leaning on a guy like Tolopilo, who had a really good first professional season in North America. He's never done it. He's never played an NHL game, and we barely saw him in the preseason.
Yep.
I do think there's a depth concern here, even beyond sort of what it means for Abbotsford's backup spot. Like, I think at the NHL level, too, this introduces even more uncertainty into one of the big question marks we've had around this team for a bit. The three-goalie thing, Rick, I'm curious to sort of compare notes here, because not only do I think it's a consideration, I think it's an active plan A. Like, I think it's what the Canucks intend to do, all things being equal, moving forward here. How do you think that impacts things for Shelovs and Lankinen? There's only so many nets to go around.
Yeah, well, and the other one is, you know, when Demko comes back, the Canucks are going to have to look at some serious load management with him. Do you take three goaltenders on a long road trip, and maybe, you know, do you do stuff like that? What is Demko's, how many games are you willing to give him when he comes back? And there's so many things at play, Thomas. But I think that the big thing at play when Demko comes back is going to be load management, is going to be to watch his games, watch his practice, watch his rest. And you know what? Now you understand why they were so persistent in getting Lankinen and making sure they got him. They did a great job of outwaiting Lankinen. They got the guy. You saw in Edmonton how well he played. But when I look at Demko and when he comes back, I see a lot of load management happening.
You talk about a great job, and I know you can't say anything bad about the Canucks. I understand that. But about their load management with Demko last year? I mean, we always talk about that game in Chicago. You'd hope they'd be concerned about his load management. It was bad.
After the All-Star game in Toronto, people rip Demko for being injury prone. How about taking a look at the last three coaches who have overplayed him, right? You know, there's something to say about maybe he can't play 60 to 65 games. They went to the All-Star game last year, and right after the All-Star game, they went to Carolina. They had that whole month was basically road trip after road trip. And as Donnie mentioned,
we always talk about the game in Chicago.
Yeah, do you really got to play Demko in Chicago? They were 31st in the NHL. They had scored 8 goals in their previous 9 games, and you can't beat the Chicago Blackhawks without Demko? It's not all on Demko. You got to look at some of the coaches that overplayed him in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years as well.
Do you need to have three goalies on the roster to manage the workload, though? I guess that's my question, because we're talking here about how tight to the cap they're going to be all year, and they're going to have to make some of these really difficult decisions. And I think those become all the more difficult to manage if you're committed to carrying three goalies. And I know Shelovs, it's been reported, right, he said to his agent, hey, I want to be in the NHL. That's been communicated to the team, but he doesn't have to go through waivers. And so I do wonder if Shelovs is both going to be, one, the opening night starter, but also end up playing a chunk of the season in Abbotsford here.
And just the thought of you know, you mentioned Tolopilo, and the thought if there's an injury or two and he has to see NHL action, that's frightening. There's nothing against him, but you know, we talk about the Boston Bruins and picking up Patera. You know who's in Boston is Michael DiPietro.
Yeah, that's right.
He's a promising goaltender of the Canuck organization. And I'll never forget, Thomas, you'll remember this a couple of years ago. Not more than a couple of years ago. But his debut against San Jose, when it was clear that the Sharks were taking it easy on him, and they ended up pumping seven goals past them. It's a huge leap for any position, but especially a goaltender. And, you know, it wasn't long before he got he was sent packing.
Another thing is if this team does try to operate outside of LTI, right, and is tolling daily space, having waiver-exempt guys like Shelovs, like Ratu, like Baines – right, and it allows them to sort of send them down when you're home. You know what I'm saying? And that would free up or allow you to toll more space, which I think we all understand the Canucks would like to do with an eye on making in-season trades. That's sort of another edge here. And I guess I'd add this, Jamie. One thing is, if you're backing up on a game night, you got to be prepared to play. But also, you're the goalie who does all the warm-up stuff. You have the long day at practice. At morning skate, day of. You know what I mean? You're working with the scratches oftentimes. So, you know, having three goaltenders and being able to give your starter a day off that's an actual day off, I actually think there's...
But didn't they hire the practice goalie last year to help with that?
They did.
Right? But like, I don't know that it has to be an extra body on the roster to address that.
No, you're right. It doesn't have to be. Well, it does in terms of the in-game stuff. Warm-ups.
Yeah, in-game,
But yes, you're right, at least in terms of the day of. But still, in terms of mental rest, in terms of all of that, I do think being the full day off, I honestly think this is, something we probably need at this point. I mean, you think about the e-bug system, you think about... how many goalie injuries we get year after year. You think about how many goalies, like, you know, Eric Comrie getting claimed on waivers every week during the pandemic. I mean, you know, I honestly think we're at a point where the league should consider having three goaltenders as just like a thing, given sort of how these teams function and how especially in Vancouver,
given Demko's history with his health, it's not
absolutely
not a bad idea at all. I mean, you've got a Vezina finalist here who's a franchise goaltender, and I think you got to go out of your way. This just in, goalies are pretty important. You got to go out of your way to make sure he can perform as well as he can, and I think that's a great idea.
And they gotta come up with a plan for Demko here, because his contract's not far away, guys. It's 2 years away. And if he's going to continue to have injury problems, I cannot see the Vancouver Canucks signing him long term. So what they've got to do this year and the offseason is come up with a good plan for him where he plays a nice amount of games, where he's healthy, he's rested. And then the playoffs come, guys. You know, you can't really load manage in the playoffs. Your number one goalie's got to go every night, every second, third night. You can't load manage in the playoffs. He's your guy. He's got to go every night. So, you know what? I think one of the biggest issues with this organization is figuring out Demko's injury and then doing the proper things to make sure he doesn't go through this year after year.
Especially the most important time of year. And obviously that they didn't do a good job of that last year.
No,
he plays one game and out the door he goes.
Absolutely.
Shelovs did well.
It would also have to be, of course, a conversation that Demko and his camp would be very involved in. Of course, the amount that you pay a 40-game starter and the amount that you pay a 60-game starter is pretty significantly different. Lots at stake as the Canucks try to sort this out.
Unless you're Jeremy Swayman.
Well, he's trying to reset that market. We'll see if he can get it done. Elsewhere on the roster.
You've got 64 million good rebuttals to my point. Thanks, Donnie.
Elsewhere on the roster, Canucks make a whole bunch of cuts this week, and really we're down to, you know, the final few guys battling for those last roster spots. And I think it probably caught some people by surprise. I'll include myself there, that Arshdeep Baines was kept on the roster ahead of Phil DiGiuseppe, and Baines is there. I would put him with Nils Amon and Atu Ratu really battling for that final forward spot, and all of a sudden now you've got three young players fighting for that spot. And as Rick Tocchet said, there's going to be some hard decisions, but ultimately that's a really good thing for the organization, maybe something that didn't exist a couple of years ago. What's your reaction? I'll start with you, Don, to those, you know, the young players really staking their claim for a spot on this roster.
Well, I'll just go with what Rick Tocchet said yesterday. He was so happy to have tough decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he talked about, you know, coming here, although it wasn't, you know, a training camp, but midway through a season, there wasn't really many tough decisions to make. It was obvious who was going to be on the roster. And I think he welcomes this sort of thing, especially you can tell that he's got a soft spot for Attu Ratu. And because he worked so damn hard, obviously, in the offseason, I mean, it's pretty obvious that he improved his skating. He loves him as a face-off option, and he does that thing where he flips his stick and is able to do what a right-hander would do on the right side of the ice when the face-off is there. You can tell he's got a lot of respect for him. And then when you've got Archdeep Baines, which is found money, an undrafted guy, yeah. A local kid, being able, at least at this point, to stick around at this point, I think it's a big, big deal. I think they've got some pleasant problems on their hands. Health aside, for the first time in a long time, it looks good. And, you know, Nylander wasn't even at camp, so there's more youth in this organization, more prospects than I think people would have said, what, 3-4 weeks ago?
Absolutely. With Lekera Mackey, I just wanted to say, as soon as the Canucks signed four wingers over the summer, guys, he was going to be in tough. And, come on. And look at three of those four wingers are in the top six of practice today. The other guy's a fourth line guy. But Lekera Mackey showed enough skill, hockey sense. He's a big part of the future. Going down to Abbotsford's not going to hurt him. I thought that Max Sasson kid gives the Canucks some depth at center, and he's a kid to watch up the middle. They can't keep signing Suitors and Blugers to 1-2-year deals. You need guys coming up to look at Attu Ratu, third line center of practice today. But I like that Sasson kid. He played 5 preseason games, I think he did. And the Russian defenseman Kirill, he's got a bright future. The kid
Coots. Hey, Coots.
Kirill's gonna be a good one. Keep an eye on him. Hey, Tocchet said at practice the other day that I can't pronounce his last name. And so he just called him Kirill. I'm in the same boat. So I'm going to say this Kirill kid.
Coots. Just call him Coots.
Kirill.
It's going to. Tocchet will end up calling him Coots as the year
but
goes
if,
on.
If I try the name and on. I screw it up, you guys are going to laugh at me. So Kirill, everybody knows who I'm talking about. This kid, nobody was taking him in the 7th round. Tampa Bay texted his agent and said, hey, we'll give him a training camp tryout. That's about the best we can do. And the agent was phoning around, and the Canucks drafted him in the 7th round. This kid in the 7th round is going to surprise a lot of people.
He already has.
Yeah, absolutely, Don. He's and when Rick Tocchet raves about a kid, your ears got to perk right away. He loves this kid, and he loves Sawyer Mineo in Seattle. That's another kid he praised. And quickly on Sawyer Mineo, Seattle's in a rebuild.
Why do you talk about him single show we have?
I love the kid. He's a Kamloops kid, Donnie. Sawyer Mineo is going to go down to Seattle. They're in a rebuild. I don't know if they trade him, but he's on the Canadian junior team, junior Canadian radar for their junior team. That's another big good prospect. I tell you.
We didn't even talk about EPD. Right?
Yeah, he's another good one. They got
DPD.
You know what?
Vilmar Ulriksson, another one of your guys, right? Big Ulriksson guy?
Yeah, there's another guy. He goes to Guelph. He's going to go back. He's there. And 6'6". Are you kidding me? Yeah. He had a great camp.
But Tocchet the other day, post-game, mentioned Coots. Before he mentioned, he almost mentioned EPD as a courtesy, DPD as a courtesy.
Yeah, but he mentioned Kirill first.
And he's got the ELC.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing, absolutely, right? Because you can tell that Pettersson has tools, whether it's the size, some of what he can do as a puck carrier, that I think is going to give him a shot to be higher up a lineup down the line than Kudryavtsev, but you can't watch the two and tell me that Kudryavtsev's not closer to being NHL-ready today than his counterpart drafted somewhat earlier at the 2022 NHL entry draft. Interesting. Well, it's going to be fun to watch all these guys that Rick thinks are great prospects and see how track their success here.
Hey, why are you being negative, Thomas? I'm giving you some good prospects.
He was just positive. He gave you a compliment.
I'm excited. Right. I'm excited to track all of Rick's favorite prospects.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Mineo's a Kamloops kid. He's a BC boy.
Here we go.
He's a BC boy. Are you kidding me?
You guys need a daily Sawyer Mineo segment on
guys,
the show. This
guys,
day.
Guys, an over-under for you.
We have one.
Guys, an over-under for you. How many Canucks clients does Mineo's agent have? 4.5, over-under.
Who's Sawyer Mineo's agent? Who's Sawyer Mineo's agent?
You're the agent.
It's
Alain Watt. He's got six.
There we go.
The answer's over.
He's got six. He's passed. And Thomas, he has passed.
Good guy. Good guy.
He's a good guy. He's out of St. Louis.
Good guy. Good clients.
Good guy. But listen, he's passed Milstein. Milstein last year had the most Canuck clients. He passed Milstein because Milstein has six or seven. Milstein's way down to three now.
I don't think
Landwa's taken over.
I don't think his Twitter game's as good as Milstein's though. But Milstein is Kirill.
Oh, don't
right?
underrate Alain Watt. Alain Watt's got some tweets.
Oh, all right. Kirill is Milstein, right?
Yeah.
Taylor loves Milstein. Taylor loves Milstein. He wants him on every week on the show. But anyways, he's got Kirill. Yep.
Apparently, we have to get Alain Watt on the team on the show.
Well, all we need the Canucks to bench one of his clients first, and then he can do the rounds like Milstein did with Kuzmenko.
Oh, yes. Let's go.
That was
yes.
good. All right, I understand you guys got to run a little bit early today, so we'll let you go.
Yes.
But thank you as always for doing this, and we will catch up with you fellas next week.
Cheers, boys.
Beautiful guys. Adios. Thank you.
That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal, of course, from Donnie and Dolly Monday to Friday on Czech TV, joining us for the crossover as they do every Wednesday. I feel like that was really the skeleton key to understanding Dhaliwal's prospect analysis. Just look at the agent, see how much business they're doing with the Canucks.
Bet the over under. That was too on brand. I got to stop.
No, it's fine. when I am seeking detailed prospect analysis, I turn to Rick Dhaliwal first and foremost on who's going to make it in the NHL. All right, lots more.
I'd turn to him for pronunciation. Guidance on pronunciation.
Honestly, I can't chirp him because I'm just as bad with
Kudryavtsev.
Kudryavtsev. That wasn't bad.
Yeah, I thought you were close.
Yeah, close. That was like in the ballpark.
You were more than in the ballpark. I think you had a seat.
That was like enough not to get chirped for mispronouncing it, I think. Kudryavtsev.
I think so, too. Although, I will say, the Elias Pettersson thing is going to end my broadcasting career. I don't know why I can't do it. You know what it is, man? I'm one of those people who can't unlearn something I learned the first time.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, I retain information well, but mm-hmm. If I retain incorrect information, it's, like, hard to disabuse me of it. And so, I had Elias Pettersson. It took me, like, 2 years to say Elias Pettersson correctly. And now I can't, so my brain just doesn't work when I try and do it.
All right, we'll wrap it up there for this segment. Again, shout out to Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. You can watch them Monday to Friday on Czech TV on Donnie and Dolly, 10 to noon. They'll be back next week. We got an open segment up next, so we'll react to a little bit of what's happening at Canucks practice. We can take your texts as well. Jason Bukala joins us at 1 o'clock. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintech Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. The Roar is back at BC Place for the BC Lions 70th season. Get your tickets now at BC Lions.com. As a reminder, if you missed the crossover in our first segment, it will be uploaded shortly to the Sportsnet YouTube page, so you can check out the full segment every week on our YouTube page. And if for some reason you want to relive it, you can do that as well, even if you caught it the first time. Speaking of the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, somebody texts in unsigned this question: can you claim a goalie and put him on waivers the following day to get him to go to the AHL?
Yes.
You can, but my understanding is that
the first team, the team you claimed him off of,
would have the, yeah.
So there's like a clock. NHL teams call it the clock. And basically when a player is waived, right, they don't actually have to be sent down, right? You can clear waivers.
Right.
And then you remain waiver exempt for, and now I'd have to like double check
30
this.
Days?
I think it's 30 days.
Yeah.
That was what I was going to say, but I was just going to caption it or qualify it with, I don't have my CBA out in front of me, but if memory serves, it's 30 days. Likewise, if you claim a player, that clock is operative. And when you put him on waivers again, he doesn't go through the standard priority. He's first offered back to the team who lost the player, right? So waivers are designed so that teams can't artificially bury a guy who's NHL caliber.
Yeah.
Right? Waivers are not designed for a team to like accumulate American League depth. Right? That's not what this is about. Waivers is a device to protect players that should be in the NHL. That's what it's designed for, provided that player has accumulated enough service time. So that's sort of how it works, and that's why it works in this manner.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I seem to recall a mechanism where... Okay, so Team A. Let's just use Patera as the example, right? Okay. The Canucks waive Patera. The Bruins claim Patera. The Bruins are the only team that put in on a claim on Patera. They try to send him down. They put him on waivers to send him down to the AHL, right? He gets offered back to the Canucks first. In that situation, can the Canucks take Patera and put him directly into the AHL?
Yes.
Right. So if the Bruins were the only team who put a claim on him and they waive him subsequently, the Canucks can take him and it doesn't work like the normal waiver process. They can put him directly into the AHL.
I believe that's correct.
That's my understanding.
I'd have to fine tooth comb it in the CBA, but it does work functionally similar to how you've laid it.
And I will say, not that I would bet on that exact scenario unfolding here, and I don't know if any other team did put a claim in on Yuri Patera, but the Bruins got him. But just given the specific circumstances of Boston, right, where if they do end up getting a deal done with Jeremy Swayman, they're going to put a goalie on waivers, and that goalie is going to be Yuri Patera. It's just a potential scenario that could unfold to keep track of. But to the question of, you know, could the Canucks try to just claim a goalie and then put him on waivers? Yeah, but it's not that simple, and the other team could easily just take him back after doing that. 650-650 again is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So the Canucks out practicing at UBC today after the very, very interesting practice yesterday at Rogers Arena that we were on the air live for. And Brendan Batchelor is there for 650. So he had the lines mostly unchanged. So I'll just run through them quickly again. Heinen, Miller, Besser on the first line. DeBrusque, Pettersson, Sprong on the second line. Third line, the trio of Atu Ratu, Nils Höglander, and Connor Garland reunited. So after Ratu was the extra forward at practice yesterday, he goes back in between Nils Höglander and Connor Garland. And then Nils Amon skating on the wing. Teddy Blueger is the fourth line center with Kiefer Sherwood. Arshdeep Bains is the extra forward today. The defense pairings are unchanged. Still no Pius Suter at practice, of course, after Rick Tocchet said he was being evaluated further yesterday. He was not on the ice with the main group at practice today. So, a little bit of a change up here, and as we kind of said yesterday, you know, we didn't expect the lines they rolled out to be a final decision yesterday at Rogers Arena. You would expect still some tinkering, some trying things out from the coaching staff. I do think it's notable, one, that Ratu is getting that shot, not in a fourth-line role, but going right back to the third line between Höglander and Garland. I think that's interesting, right, especially considering the chemistry that they've developed, but also Bains and Ratu now have each had a turn being the extra forward at one of these practices this week. Amon hasn't yet. Maybe he is. Maybe they try a third configuration out tomorrow. But it's important to note it's not just a Ratu versus Bains battle, right? It's these three guys for one spot. And based on the fact that Ratu and Bains have each been the 13 forward once, but Amon hasn't, he's been in the lineup in both of these practice configurations, I would still handicap it as Nils Amon with the inside track to win that 12 forward spot.
Yeah, and the waiver consideration, I think, looms large here, right?
Yep.
The fact that Amon needs to clear if he's going to report to Abbotsford and remain an option for this club down the line at a vital position.
That's the real thing, right?
I mean,
that it's because if you, like we were talking about it, you know, they lose Patera, and all of a sudden, until Demko's healthy, you're one injury away from it being Nikita Tolopilo. If you lose Nils Amon, and then, you know, Pius Suter's out longer than you expect. Teddy Blueger gets injured.
Pius Suter's already hurt. Teddy Blueger rejoined the group for his first practice this week. You know, he'd been skating with the group, but, like, in terms of, you know, that real first practice, like, he missed training camp, right? So it's not like this is some far off, you're one injury away from needing this guy consideration. It's present. It's right here. You know, you are potentially one injury away now in a world where you didn't have Nils Amon from playing Max Sasson, which, you know, I think's fine, right? Like, Max Sasson, I think, is a player. But, you know, do you want to be there at the outset of the season, given what we know about how, you know, frequently injuries create nightmare seasons, yeah, even for teams that look really solid on paper entering the year? Now, Amon is 24. Okay, he's played 110-plus NHL games. He's played in the playoffs. He's a really good penalty killer. He's tall, right? He's got good size. He's defensively reliable. He's legitimately fast, right? Teams, I think, have seen enough where they believe that there might even be some offensive upside through on the rush anyway, right? Maybe not in zone, but off the rush. He's got a good American League production to back that up too, right? He can't win draws. That's the big drawback. But NHL teams tend to believe that they can teach a guy who's tall and big and smart and hardworking how to win draws.
And he's still only 24, right? Only 24. And how often does a player, a center after that age, develop real much improved faceoff skills? That happens all the time.
Almost every center. Yeah.
Like, that is one skill that definitely gets better with age into your late 20s.
Age and faceoff percentage are literally correlated for longtime NHL centermen, period. So, I mean, I wouldn't say he's a lock to be claimed, but I'd say the risk of him being claimed if he were to be exposed on waivers is exceedingly high.
Yeah, and I guess the only counter argument to that, because as you said, all of those factors you layer
one way deal.
Exactly. And not even just at like the league minimum either. It's a little bit. So if you're a cash conscious team or you're at all concerned about that, that could scare you off. I don't know if it's enough to outweigh the other things, though.
I think it would have scared teams off before last season. Like, when, because remember, that deal was signed the day that Amon began to require waivers, right? They called him up. He appeared in one game. He needed waivers again, and that deal was signed immediately. And it was a sharp and thoughtful way, you know, almost like you could almost say the club spent too much time figuring out how to make Nils Amon like a complicated waiver claim in how they structured that contract, right? Like, it was... They really went to the mattresses to make it so that they would retain roster flexibility if it came to it with Amon. But now, like, after last season, after what he did last season, after he played all those penalty-killing minutes, after he appeared in the postseason for the Canucks, I think the cat's out of the bag. I don't think you can get a two-year deal under $950K through waivers, right? Or what is it, 870, 850?
850.
Yeah, I don't think you can get that through waivers.
825.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's not... It's 50K more than the veteran minimum for a 24-year-old center that some team out there probably talks themselves into saying, hey, at the very least, this guy has more upside than, you know, Sam Carrick or whatever guy you're playing on your fourth line, right? Like, that's how you talk yourself into it if you're an Anaheim, San Jose, Chicago-type rebuilding team. Amon's a free lottery ticket, a free dart throw. So I think he'd be I don't want to say something as like, strong as improbable, but I think it's, you know, sub 50% that he'd clear. That would be how I'd handicap it. And, you know, is that a risk that this team can afford to take at such a crucial position given their overall depth? On the other hand, on the other side of this, though, we think the Canucks are going to bring in center help at some point this season anyway.
Yeah.
Right? If you're going to do that, having as much cap flexibility as possible is kind of key. And if you're able to avoid LTI and accumulate or toll cap space daily all season long, well, having Atu Ratu, even though the fact that he is waiver exempt is actually an advantage because he's a guy you can freely send up and down at the end of every day, especially when you're home, so as to avoid, you know, that cap charge on that specific day and keep rolling it over. To some extent, that's an edge that, like, Baines has over Phil DiGiuseppe if the team's avoiding LTI, that Ratu might have over Amon, and that, you know, Shelovs would certainly have over Patera, right? So, is that instructive depending on how they decide to set the opening day roster?
That's an interesting point, too, about, okay, because as we were talking about it briefly before the crossover, if you are really committed to staying out of LTI because you want to maximize what you can add throughout the season and especially at the trade deadline, that's going to force you to into a bunch of difficult decisions. And that might mean, hey, one night you're playing with, you know, 17 skaters instead of 18. That might mean exposing a guy like Phil DiGiuseppe on waivers and hoping that he clears. But I guess another permutation of that could be exposing Nils Åman because you know that you're going to supplement your center depth at some point anyways, right? And I wonder if even similar to the conversation we were having after they lose Jiří Patera, right, where it's, okay, is there veteran goalie X who's already in the AHL who's out there that you can trade for on the cheap to at least just give yourself a little bit of extra insurance with Abbotsford? I mean, if you want Ratu on the team, and part of the reason you do is to be able to toll as much cap space as you can throughout the season, okay, if that means you have to risk losing Åman, is there veteran AHL center that you can acquire to at least give you one more layer between Max Sassen coming up and, the, you know, one injury away from all of a sudden you're calling up Nate Smith or you're calling up Max Sassen? Because I think with those players, you know, as we said yesterday, there's a big difference between can give you NHL games and being an NHL player. And those guys are clear, like Max Sassen's clearly in the can give you NHL games, but not a full-time NHL player. And so I don't know, like somebody texts in here, Åman is trade bait. It's an interesting position where it's like we're debating whether he'd be picked up on waivers. Is there any trade value for a player like Nils Åman if you're worried about losing him on waivers? And is there a route to going out and bringing in somebody else who doesn't have that same sort of waiver consideration that can add organizational depth and that allows you to keep Atu Ratu on the roster? I mean, for me, I look at it and I just think the fact that he has the penalty-killing ability to hang his hat on, right? He has that one well-defined skill that coaches really, really value that he's established at the NHL level. When you combine that and the threat of losing him on waivers, I would bet on him winning that final roster spot. But I do wonder if there's other avenues that moving him, acquiring another depth center, things like that, that the Canucks could explore if they really want Ratu and his flexibility on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're most likely talking about a player that's going to serve as the 13th forward when Dakota Joshua's back. Now, that's an argument for Åman in some ways, right? Given sort of the idea that maybe Ratu's best off playing
you
maximum
want Ratu to
minutes.
Play. Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, what is Åman if he hits? Like, what's the
he's
outline the rosiest
your
possible
your
next 3 years?
Center.
Maybe a third line center if he became a 52% faceoff guy. Could he be one of those, you know, sort of like an old school type no offense lockdown third line center? Could, you know, sort of like late career Sammy Paulson?
I'd be very concerned about the team's offensive production if any team, if Nils Åman is your third line center. Now maybe he has a big glow up there, but that right now that would seem a bit of a bridge too far.
The way the league is going too, right? I mean, on the one hand, the way the league is going and how much scoring is done off the rush, that might play into his strengths. On the other hand, you know, the fact remains is that when you get down to the playoffs, like, a lot of these goals are still ugly and scored down low, and we haven't seen a lot of sort of on puck creativity offensively from Åman. Like, you know, you don't want to lose a young player with his level of experience for nothing, but I also do think you need to be considering how efficiently you use those back end of the roster spots. You know, if Ratu's more likely to by game 40 be like a piece that helps put you over the top, or a piece where you're like, hey, you know what, we don't need to spend assets on a third line center, we've got our version of Anton Lundell, we've got, you know, our version of an ELC contributor who's legitimately making a difference for us and helping us win games, you know, is finding that out, is getting the answer there. And even if your answer is no, creating an asset that has a ton of value in the meantime, is that a better use of your resources, your limited resources, than, you know, holding out hope that Åman, because he contributes on the PK? I mean, it's actually a pretty difficult thing to weigh, I think, when you really get into it.
It really is. There's so much. It sounds like such a silly thing to kind of obsess over. I mean, obviously,
totally.
That's what we do on our show.
That's literally what we do.
But there are so many dominoes that flow from the decision. And even that point about, like, hey, you might be creating an asset in Atu Ratu, but all of a sudden, you know, you can go out, you can use him as a premium asset at the trade deadline. You don't have to touch Luckermacki or Velander, and you can still add a decent piece, right? Like, that becomes reality if he's played 35 games and done pretty well for you in the NHL.
Well, and that's sort of what we're talking about across the board. I mean, Rick and company listing all the names of the prospects, you know, and it's like, hey, maybe there's some guys there, right? Like, if Minio's able to make the Team Canada World Junior roster, like, that becomes an asset that's spiked in value. What does this organization often do with your Hunter Brustevich prospect that spikes in value? They consider moving on from him, right? If Kudryavtsev's able to play NHL games for you this year and gives you 25 games, and you're like, okay, well, he's still an undersized lefty who is going to have to hit a preposterous level of defensive excellence to play more than third pair minutes ever, right? Just, and this is not me besmirching his skill set by any means. It's like, if you're not an elite offensive driver as a defenseman and you're not big, you have to be like a Jared Spurgeon level defensive player to be a top four guy.
Top four. Yeah.
Like, that's just how this player type works, right? But ELC has played in the NHL and not looked out of place on a good team. Teams like that as a secondary asset in a trade package.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Kudryavtsev, he's already played. He'll be in our roster tomorrow. Like, that's a nice asset.
Yep.
So, you know, I also think we have to think about things in those terms, given the aggressiveness of this front office, which I think has been underlined by the sacrifices that they've already been willing to make, right? In terms of, I know we're going to go to break. They're going to play me off soon.
No. Don't worry. You got, like, at least 2 minutes.
But lost in this, like, the Canucks prefer to avoid, we just say it now, right?
Yep.
The Canucks prefer to avoid LTI and we move on. As if, like, that's just a thing we all know. The team has echoed it. We've been reporting it for months. It's a built-in assumption. When you actually think about the enormity of what they're attempting to do, it's kind of wild, right? It's like you've got $3 million plus in dead space from the Mikheyev retained salary transaction and the OEL buyout, right? Throw an additional $2.5 million on Tucker Pullman that you're not going to seek cap relief on. Throw an extra $5 million on top of that from Thatcher Demko out indefinitely as you enter the season, and an additional $3 million on top of that from Dakota Joshua. Like, this team's plan, operative plan A, is to try and enter the season and field a competitive lineup while seeking zero cap relief from $13 million of non-contributing money at the start of the season. And we're all looking at this and just saying, like, hey, and they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
The enormity of what they're attempting shouldn't be understated.
Well, and I'd also, that goes to the next point, which is, why are they doing it? They're not doing it just for fun. They're doing it so they can make a splash down the line.
They're doing it so they don't end up in a money in, money out situation where, you know, that, like, there's no way that you can acquire the Gensel type piece unless a team takes, you know, your winger that can't finish back as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where they ended up at the deadline last year. They don't want a repeat of it. That's why they're going to jump through these hoops. And that means, too, that we have to stop, or not stop, but change, alter our thinking about some of these prospects and what they could be down the line. It's not to avoid signing Suter and Bluger in the future. That's exactly what you should be doing, right? Like, the prospects.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Dollywell said that, I was like, I don't know, those seem like pretty good deals to me.
Those are great deals.
I would keep doing those deals.
100%. No, and so, because this organization has so reliably been able to find X middle six guy for cheap,
mm-hmm.
developing those in-house matter less. The guys you need to keep are the guys that could be a lot more than that, right? If you're a good depth prospect, that's a trade asset.
All right, we will take a break. Jason Bukala joins us next here on Canucks Talk. And by the way, just before we do go to break, all preseason coverage here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Tile Town. As BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season, receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details. Jason Bukala next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz.
This hour is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And now very pleased to be joined, as we always are on Wednesdays at this time, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout as well. He is Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on, man?
Not too much, fellas. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. It's only one preseason game left to get through for the Canucks, and they're practicing this week. So we're actually a week away from opening night today. So it's getting really close, and that's very, very exciting. And, you know, the Canucks have made a bunch of cuts this week, and really the two young players of note left with the team are Atu Ratu and Arshdeep Bains. What's your reaction to those players earning, if not a spot on the roster, at least this long look from the team before they make their final cuts?
Well, Bains has been close, hasn't he? He's been a recall in the past,
yep.
And obviously his offensive pedigree has stood out at the American Hockey League level, and two completely different prospects, although Ratu had a nice year as well in the American League last year. But, you know, really the role that you see or you project these two players playing if they were to get games going forward with the big team, you know, Ratu has shown that he can play that type of muscle game in the middle of the ice, potentially even on the flank, I think, if he had to. But from the goal line down, hash marks down in the offensive zone, he's extending plays. He's playing on straight lines much quicker and faster, I believe. Like, I'd say another 15% quicker than he was when he first arrived in the American League. So two completely different players, well-earned, especially in Ratu's category, in my estimation. Curious to see DiGiuseppe go down. I think that was probably... You know, I really liked how he played at the end of the year, especially last year for the Canucks. So lucky for them, he slipped through on waivers, I see today. And I'll be interested to see if he's a quick recall in case of need.
With a player like Ratu, Books, excelled down the stretch on the wing. He's 21. If it was going to happen for him, it kind of had to happen for him in some capacity this year. And by that, I mean, if he was going to hit big, right? Like, it's pretty rare for a guy to not be having a strong camp at 21. And then at 23, they're an impact guy in the NHL. Like, he needed to take this kind of step. What does it mean for how we should view his sort of trajectory here?
I agree with that statement. First of all, I mean, it becomes time, doesn't it? You know, when you've been around for, 3 years, and when he was in his draft cycle, as you guys know, he was a highly regarded prospect, like a potential, top 10 type of a pick who slid and had draftitis. But you know what? He's put in the work, guys. We touched on this, and I can't even remember how many times we touched on this. It seems like every week. But the culture that's been built there in Vancouver and the expectation of the players, there's a buy-in, and he's part of that process. And the one thing I have to say here is that we touched on it last week. The B game is important, right? Because if you're not producing offense, you're going to have to do some other things to, extend plays, wear down your opponent. You know, when you get a shift up against a top four set of D, for example, and you can really wear them down off the cycle or with some heavy hard play. Well, then when your top six guys come back out against that same pairing the next time up, they got a little bit less left in the tank, and that hopefully opens up ice for your teammates. So I think that's the step that he's taken. He's more trustworthy now. And it's not just going to be about offense for him. It's going to be all those little things that the coaching staff will have to continue to trust. And he's earned that so far.
And, one of the things we were talking about earlier in the show, Books, is we know that this front office likes to be aggressive, that they're probably going to try to make a splash before the trade deadline at some point. And, part of that, from our perspective, is taking stock of who their good young assets are. And, not that you want to be parting with a player like Atu Ratu, but you got to give up good stuff if you want to make a big deal. And, Ratu has had such an interesting journey as a prospect, right? Going back to pre-draft and then after he, his draft year falling, he was part of the Bo Horvat trade. Where is his stock around the industry and how much could it increase if he does, have a solid or better showing in 30 or 35 games for the Canucks in the NHL this year?
Interesting. I mean, I think that they're going to want that to play out as long as possible. And hopefully he's the guy that turns into be the impact guy that they want on their roster instead of having to necessarily. But listen, the Canucks took a massive step last year. They're potentially going to be, you know, the same team this year, if not better. I mean, I see people saying that, you know, they might fall back. And yeah, I mean, you're always an injury or two away or some bad luck away from regression. I get that. But this is a player that, you know, as you get into the back half of January, let's suggest, and he's playing a significant role, absolutely his value goes up. Is it there right now, though, guys? Absolutely not. Not in my estimation. He's on the radar. That's how I would position it. People are now, you know, all the pro scouts have been making their rounds to the exhibition games, and they've been, you know, building lists of high achievers in exhibition games, you know, for these purposes, to create a book and say, listen, he's close to being able to do this for our organization. So on the radar for sure. I think the Canucks want for him to be the guy there, but time will tell.
With Kudryavtsev, right, had a really good camp, really stood out. Tarek Tockett obviously played in the O. You're familiar with his game. I'm curious, though, to get your take on this, because as good as he's looked, as close to NHL ready as he's looked, Books, at the end of the day, if you're a non-elite offensive producer who's an undersized left-handed defender, I mean, how good do you have to be defensively to ever play a shift in the top four at the NHL level with that profile?
Yeah, it's tough. I'm not going to lie. I mean, you know, like, I even watched last week in the game, you know, Hirose, he's got some dart and dash to him, right? And then he gets blown up on the half wall last week in Calgary. Like, you know, there's only so much space for guys at this stature. He's 20 years old. He's got an element that projects to be able to do some things, at least in a secondary scoring role, and, you know, produce that way. But having said all of that, you're bang on. There's it's tough. If you look at the lineup that the Canucks have, and, you know, this is a seventh round pick, don't forget. So they're already kind of exceeding value, if you will. Like, this is, he's done pretty well for himself already. But it's going to be heavy lifting, guys. I don't want to discount how hard it is going to be for him here, but there is an appetite for this type of player. Again, as the value increases for the player, hopefully in the minor leagues, there is a space for this type of player in the league. You know, he's 200 pounds. Like, it's not like he's a small light guy. Like, he's built together, you know, he's put together, but where does he fit in Vancouver long term? Not sure about that.
Yeah, like, don't you have to be like Jared Spurgeon defensively if you're it's just such a high level. It's so much higher in terms of the effectiveness you have to have without the puck. If you're, you know, a lefty shooter who's not jumbo sized in this league, is kind of how I look at it. And so I'm curious, Books, are there prospect types that you have to consider? Like, hey, they might arrive earlier, but they might not have the same upside as a guy who even, like, looks worse over the course of training camp or seems to be struggling more to find their footing in the at the AHL level.
That happens often,
right?
You know, believe it or not. You know, it really does. Like, prospects, it's never a straight line. And I'll give you another example. You know, Slafkovský, you know, from 2 years ago, you know, and all this Shane Wright, people were down on Slafkovský out of the box a little bit in, you know, maybe the Montreal market. They were waiting. They grew impatient very quickly. Let's just say that until they didn't. You know what I mean? Like, so there's guys in the organization that spike sooner than other guys. But the runway, like the longevity, you know, when you're looking at a smaller left shot defenseman, he might be able to plug a hole, you know, for a period of time here and there. But the longevity, the stickability, if you will, it's hard to project. The Jared Spurgeon one, that's a fantastic example, because Spurgeon, obviously, you know how he's built like a fire hydrant, a small compact guy, but I mean, he plays like his hair is on fire, and he's in it all the time, right? So that's where it's a little bit different for a player like this, because he's not going to have that interior grit, at least not yet. I don't see it, guys. I don't foresee it. So maybe it'll change. We'll see.
So I'll throw another one out. Reckless comparison here, but we're talking a guy listed at 6 foot, around 200 pounds, drafted in the later rounds. Gustav Forsling. That's how elite defensively you have to be with that profile.
What a But hey, that's another fantastic example, right? So there's an example of a journey that's been uneven. Like, this is a guy who's a waiver guy, and then he rediscovers himself. Now, that's an anomaly, right? He's a unicorn, but perfect situation for him when he lands in Florida. And now look what he's turned that into. I don't know what that extension was like, but it was a long-term extension, mm-hmm. playing heavy, heavy minutes in Florida. And so that's the other flip side of it. So that's why I'm trying to, you know, at 20 years old, let's give it some time. But if you're going to put me on the spot and say, is there going to be room with what the Canucks have on the horizon, like, especially when other guys start getting signed to longer-term deals, is there going to be room? Probably not. But let's nurture the prospect to make them valuable outside the organization and manage the asset.
Right, which is a conversation we were having, given sort of where the Canucks are at and sort of what their ambitions are going into this season, really sort of summed up by their desire, their plan A, which is kind of avoiding LTI to try and toll daily space throughout the course of the season. I mean, impossible to read that without looking ahead to the trade deadline and looking ahead to, you know, what this sort of Rutherford-led organization is expected to do, which is change things up and behave aggressively on the trade market in season. Books, for a Canucks fan, right, watching, you know, Sawyer Mineo go through this season, for example, maybe have a shot to make Canada's U-20 team. Kudryavtsev's development, on and on. Should Canucks fans be hesitant to get too attached to some of these depth prospects?
Always be hesitant. I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but here's the thing, guys. When you start to get into, you're closer in that window to be in a win now type of mode, don't fall too in love with your prospects. The job of the amateur staff is to stockpile as much as they possibly can assets that upper management can manage, which might mean that you start to trade out guys. And there's going to be a name or two over the course of, let's just say this, let's just get crazy for a second. And I don't think it is crazy, actually. So let's just say this. The Canucks are looking to add a significant piece come trade deadline this year. Tom Willander's name comes up in trade discussions. There's going to be some people in the market that are going to be like, oh, my God, you know, we've been waiting so long for certain prospects to spike here. We want this type of guy. But listen, I'll tell you what you want more. You want deep runs in the playoffs because they're hard to do. And it's when you get to that window, don't be too in love with what you have. Manage the assets. They have a pretty flush stock of draft capital for next year as well. So there's a lot of good going on. Don't fall too in love because it's a slippery slope and you can be disappointed. You can't have everything, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
let's talk Willander quickly, Books. What are you looking for from him this season? Because it does seem like there's some split opinion about sort of what year one looked like for him at BU. You know, some sort of questions about the puck handling and the offensive toolkit. Obviously, everyone loves the skating and the motor and the defensive IQ. What are you hoping to see from him in his sophomore campaign on a BU team that's maybe somewhat less star-studded this season than it was last year?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm glad you brought it up that way because Willander in his draft year with like the Axel Sundin, Pelikka there, like all the other high-end guys that were on the Swedish national team, it was a slow burn for him, guys. Like in his U-17 year to his draft year, he slowly built. I remember the Five Nations was in Plymouth, Michigan. USA hosted it in November of their draft cycle. And, you know, he was slowly starting to come on board. So you saw the things that, you know, the skating's always been there. He's an elite skater. We get that. But some of the other things, secondary power play, you know, managing the puck better, doing some things, they spike. Now, listen, going to college, playing against older guys, yada, yada. You know, it takes some time. I'm expecting this year for him to take a step. So I'm expecting, hopefully, to be, quarterbacking, if not managing pucks. I'm not so sure he's a pure quarterback on the power play, but you know what I'm talking about? Like a guy who can just manage pucks on the power play, be part of at least the top two penalty killing units, eat minutes. I'm talking like 24 minutes a night at BU. They're going to be under duress a little bit more this year. I'm not looking for a ton of bump to his game, but just enough. Use your legs. So I'm just looking for more maturity. I'm not the least bit worried about Tom Willander. So if people are, and I know that there's always people poking holes in kids' games, especially when they're developing, it's fine. He's on a good path. He's on a solid path. He'll be stronger this year. I'm excited about him. You know that because we've talked about it a lot. But he's an asset. So, again, let's just see where it goes.
The organization's other top prospect, of course, Jonathan Lekker-Mackey, part of the cuts this week sent down to Abbotsford. And, you know, Rick Tockett asked about it, said, hey, look, he could be back up here in 30 days or at least some point down the road this season. He could be an option. You know, we saw some really good things from him at training camp and in the preseason. I think also saw some areas that he needs to work on in the AHL. How close is he to being not just a guy you can put in an NHL lineup, but how close is he to making it, okay, there's no sense in sending this guy to the AHL. He has to be in the NHL, right? Like, how close is he to crossing that barrier where the team really has no choice but to put him in the NHL?
Yeah, he hasn't crossed that threshold for me quite yet, but he has come an exceptionally long way. I really did like his preseason on balance. And so, you know, nerds like me, I look at little things like when he's not scoring, like when he gets a puck, you know, how quickly he's dissecting what's going on around him. Where is he moving it to? Where is he moving his feet to, you know, on and off the puck, things like that. I still think there's a little bit of a delay in processing, you know, certain areas. There were some turnovers in key areas of the ice, you know, but then there was some really good puck play as well. His element is he's a shooter. He's going to be on the power play. He's going to rip pucks on the flank, et cetera, et cetera. He's got to prove that he can do that in the American League for an extended period of time. Yes, he might be a recall, but I think it's spot duty. I have no problem with him continuing on his trajectory from last year at the American League level this year. But you know what? He came so far last year, he might give them too much reason, there's potential to give them too much reason not to recall him. Mm-hmm. He might just be that good. So, you know, play it out. He's still learning on the smaller ice surface, but hey, great trajectory. He's put in a lot of work. He's on a positive track as well.
And when a team has a top prospect like Lekker-Mackey going down to the AHL, and he's still very young, but I think, you know, it would probably be fair to say, when you have a guy like Lekker-Mackey, you want him to have one full year in the AHL, right? You probably don't want it to go into two next year. How much work goes in, and how do they approach kind of, okay, you're going to the AHL, but we're going to do what we can to make sure it's as positive experience as possible and that you do the developing you need to do so that this is your only year in the AHL? Like, how do organizations approach handling a top prospect like Lekker-Mackey in the AHL for a year?
Well, it's very delicate. Drancer can appreciate this one here. So, like in Florida, we drafted Henrik Borgstrom, okay, out of Finland, and he went to Denver, and he was arguably the most dynamic college player at the college level. When we brought him to the American League, Drancer, as you recall, he went to Springfield. He was kind of out on his own island and, you know, living by himself, and, you know, the team wasn't close to Florida, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot invested in these players, and it's not just what you see when you go to the rink, pay your ticket, buy your popcorn, drink your soda. Like, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. So fitness, you know, just the mental side of the game. Being in Abbotsford's a big, big deal. They're close to Vancouver. They're going to be surrounded by some really good, you know, they got some good bets on that team too in Abbotsford. So it's all going to be good, but they're going to be highly invested. And I'm talking about like every other day type invested, you know, making sure that, you know, everything's good, diet, fitness, injury, you know, mental capacity, all that kind of stuff. Every day it's a little bit of a babysitting job, but why wouldn't it be? This is a multi-million dollar athlete.
Books, with the development side in particular, it does look like the Canucks have found something in terms of maximizing it. I mean, the steps that guys like Baines and Ratu have taken sort of demand some attention. I know that from the perspective of an amateur scouting director, you're handing them off, right? You're handing them off to Kaber. Yep. and do your worst, buddy. But what does it look like in your experience when player development goes well, the way it seems to be going for several sort of Canucks players that are pushing at the moment?
Well, continuity is super important. You know, the direction that the organization, the message that comes from, you know, your team president, to your general manager, to your scouting staff, to your development team, et cetera, the trickle down effect is extremely, extremely important. So structure and positive structure. And also the understanding that not every day is a good day. It's a hard league. Like, to be a professional hockey player, to play at the highest level, especially if you're an offensive talent, you better have more than just offense, because there's going to be a lot of days, just like in the baseball playoffs, if you hit 300, you're a Hall of Famer. That means you failed 7 out of 10 times, right? So there's going to be a lot of hard days, but the continuity, the message, the direction, the structure, You can't underestimate it. And teams that go through a lot of changes internally and externally, they chase it for a long, long time. And that's what's happened in Florida. Guys like Caber, and, you know, we had Caber there. We had Chris Pronger there. When things got changed and ownership gave Bill Zito and his team the type of budget to work with that they have right now, which is excellent, the continuity and the structures there, and look at the rewards they're reaping, not so much even just from a prospect or two that's coming up because they're lean on prospects, but I'm just talking about organizational structure and that there's a message, and that's what's important in Vancouver. And I think that I think the whole group is towing the rope in the right direction.
Books, I wanted to ask you, around the league, we've seen this rash of injuries in preseason play into some really key players, obviously Doughty, Stutzle. I mean, even Macklin Celebrini left the game last night. I see he's day-to-day, they're saying, today. And it's led to a lot of talk about reducing the number of preseason games. I mean, from team staff, right, in the hockey ops department, how do they view the current number of preseason games? How have you kind of seen the approach to preseason evolve from NHL teams over your course of time in the game?
That's curious. You know, when I first got into the league in Nashville, guys wanted to play, like, all the time. And that wasn't going to happen, obviously. But I'm talking about the early 2006, whatever. It was different then. The game itself has gone through a lot of changes over the years. Nowadays, like I read yesterday that Connor McDavid wants more touches. He wants to be getting more here in the preseason, which is curious because they went to the Stanley Cup final. My take on it today, when I was walking here in Toronto, I'm in Toronto in studio here in a little bit. And when I was walking today, I was thinking about this. Are we getting to the point that we're going to be like the NFL? Like, really? Is that what's going to happen? Because, like, it's so risky to start your first 10-game segment, fellas. I know that we always look at that November date and say, where are you on American Thanksgiving? I peel it back even further. If you go 2-8 out of the blocks or 3-7 out of the blocks, you're chasing the standings right from the get-go.
Yeah, you're dead.
And if you have you're dead. Like, it's a horrible start. So are we going to get to that stage where we got to reserve our players? But there are this is the caveat. I'm foaming at the mouth. But the caveat here is that there's some teams in the league that look at that as free money.
Yeah.
Like, they're packing buildings, and it affects the bottom line, you know, that we want to put, 16,000 people in the building for a preseason game because it's an extra couple, you know, whatever it adds up to be, and $1 million in the coffers.
Here's my harebrained scheme to fix the preseason. You ready, Books?
Of course.
Okay. I want no more than 4 games. Okay. They should be weekly. You should play weekly. Just set the... There's 4 Saturdays, basically, from the opening of training camp through to the start of the regular season. Play every Saturday. 1 game, each team. Make it an event, right? And here's how you go full NFL, which I think I want to see this. I want to see unlimited roster spots in games. So, like, for example, you could dress your star players. They hang out in the locker room and stay fit, you know, stay ready. And then your team draws a power play, and they can come out and work on PP1. And then they just go back to the dressing room. You get the live game reps and minimize how much they're actually playing. So it's like, yeah, we've got Pettersson in the lineup. He's playing the first period.
Yeah. So I was with you up until the last part there. Very, very difficult to do. Like, it's just such an emotional, in-motion sport. Like, to a degree, football is a static sport. I know they're in motion, but you understand what I mean. Like, it's an explosive short window. Like, boom, 30 seconds, the play is done. But I'm with you on the weekly game thing, especially because for the most part, there's not a lot of travel in the preseason. So it's localized, right? Vancouver plays Calgary, Edmonton, Seattle, those types of things. I'm for that because you know what else these coaches are going to start complaining about in very short order, by the way? We don't have enough time to practice.
Mm.
You know, they're going to start the season. It's going to be like, we have no time to practice. They're going to be breaking down video, this, that, and the other thing. We haven't practiced in 2 weeks. Use that time right now to practice. Work on the intricacies of your power play, for example, or your penalty kill. And, you know, because even in practice, one day your power play is going to be putrid. It's going to be like they're blowing pucks up, right? But the next day you come back, work on it, and it's going to be a thing of beauty. It's going to be the ballet. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I protect the athlete. Get more practice.
There we go. We solved the NHL preseason. Books, thank you for helping us with that. Thank you, as always, for your time, man.
Awesome, guys. Look forward to next week. Start of the season. Can't wait.
Thanks for killing my dream of a 28-man lineup.
You were onto something.
But are they just gonna like hang out in full gear in the dressing room?
No. You play it. You go by period. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, Pettersson's playing the first or whatever.
Stop in your tracks. You're not gonna convince me. It was really good for a while, and then it went full on Drancer. It went off the rails. So we were almost there for a little bit.
We almost got there. Thanks, Books.
All right, boys. See ya.
That is Jason Bukala, former NHL scout, now, of course, part of Sportsnet's NHL coverage, joining us as he does every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. We'll take a break. We'll do the whiteboard in the next segment, and I think we'll play some Rick Tocchet audio as part of the whiteboard, a special bonus segment on the whiteboard today, as Rick Tocchet has finished speaking to the media after Canucks practice at UBC. That is next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.